As I read last week, we decided that we should have a session this morning to look at the mandate of the committee, particularly because most of us are new in this committee, so we want to understand this mandate so that we know exactly what we are supposed to do over the next 5 years. So we have to start by understanding. And our support team here has been there before. So they will take us through. And honorable men are still free to engage our session. It won't be a long session because we're still going to have a press session. So I'm hoping we should be done by lunchtime. They are very engaged. But the good news as well, it is also to indicate that the house chair said we can use Tuesdays and Wednesdays for our meeting. We will use Friday as and when we have loads of work. But for this Friday, we have already committed, you know, so we will keep it, but for future we'll change. So I want to tell that our main day should be Wednesday. We can use Tuesday, we do get a lot of work, but our main day will be Wednesday. But in a period like this, because we need a lot of work, let's use Tuesday, Wednesday, and avoid Friday. There are honorable members who must contact before they reach their villages. But we work on the basis that Friday is the working day, but I think we must also be reasonable not to just hide work on a Friday when we could use other days. So I guess honorable members are okay with that. Tuesday, Wednesday, but in the main Wednesday, the main day. But if a lot of work, we start working from Tuesday, Wednesday, let's try to do more work during the week so that we don't have to use Friday if we don't have to. With those words, you're all welcome. And the team will indicate who's going to take us through. I know one of the researchers that is not available this week. So their colleagues will be able to take us through. You will indicate whether you want to do the whole presentation or you will allow people to interject as you go. It's really up to you to say how you want to run it. We are here to learn. We don't want to be able to do our experts. We will be absent shortly, but today we are there. Honorable members, any comments from your side before I hand over to the team?
I think I'm speaking on behalf of all the members when I say that we appreciate the work that is done and acceptance by our chair that we do need to meet earlier in the week, have a lot more space to explore the work that we need to do and not put members under pressure on Friday. We appreciate that and thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any
other comments?
Just to Chairperson at the stage, I know it's early days, but just thank you very much for the communication that keeps us informed today, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think that the support team is very active.
Yeah.
They send me emails and I forget it on a Sunday.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me first of all commend the support team for the work. I see they keep us busy as it's long weekend as well. so there's no weekends to really support him. My concern is, I know we've got the Tuesday and Wednesday that might be allocated to us. Is there any chance, because I see public accounts all the on Wednesday, and public accounts with appropriations in some way or the other, they're more linked. Is there any chance that we'd be able to sit on a Tuesday rather than a Wednesday? Just as I know it's difficult because of the weekends, and then there are other committees on Wednesday, but on a Tuesday it seems to be a little bit more, my understanding is that of working with public accounts before, that, you know, they interlink with appropriations in a way.
Honorable members, as I said, we have Tuesday and Wednesday. I propose Wednesday, because I know that some of us who come from the division may not be here on Tuesday on time. But we should agree that we will look at that flexibility, because I worked on the basis that many members are only serving this committee, so I think the difficulty might be mainly you. We will see how to accommodate you. I think for this period in July, because of more work that we have, we probably might even need the 2 days. And then I think maybe we'll have to see how we accommodate you, but we may be there.
I agree with you, Chair, that you have to look at it and consider it. But while you are considering it, you must also look, because we have contaminants. Maybe the member is not available before they are contaminants to send the alternate. Thank you.
Shall we leave it on?
Yes.
We will see how much we can accommodate them. But it might be that we will need both things, especially because of the number of work, so that we avoid finding. Agreed? Thank you very much. Shall I now get over to the team? This is done before the time. Is that connected this time, gentlemen? What should we say? Okay. Randy, with you. I see you are hitting the
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just going to outline the presentation and who's going to be presenting which part, and then I'll hand over to my colleagues. The first thing that we're going to look at is COVID main focal areas, common trends that emerged from the work of the committee for Parliament, constraints and advantages, and Mosa is going to do that on behalf of the research team. And then Daryl and I will look at the budget cycle and the budget process. And then Tepo is going to look at themes in budgeting, look at the state of the nation address, the legal framework, and manage those acts, and also look at some examples of recommendations that the committee has made before, and what needs to happen now, important stakeholders, which include the parliamentary budget office. So that's the outline of the presentation, and I'm going to hand over to Mosa.
Greetings again, honourable members, and I'd like to again spend the opportunity to present before you. The first thing that I will cover will just be an overview of the makeup of the committee and what committee is actually dealing with throughout the budget cycle, and then some of the practical constraints that we have observed in the committee in terms of how it oversees its work, and then some of the opportunities going forward. And then, I think as the team have upgraded, it is fine that members can interject as during the presentation. Okay, maybe to start, I'll just start by highlighting the most outstanding features of the Standing Committee on Appropriation. What are the unique features of the committee? The first one that I identified is that the committee deals with the most important policy instrument of government, which is the budget. I think that may seem obvious, but we are of the view that that is the most interesting part of the committee, because budget underpins each and every course of government, whether it's the NDP, whether it's a policy on land reform, and so on and so forth. And budget is not just about numbers, but it's about the people. So in that respect, we thought that's what makes the committee most unique from others. And then the other unique feature of the committee is that it has got an overriding role or mandate. Because the mandate of the committee, if you look at it, it's cut across all departments, especially at national level. Basically, we oversee all delegates for services and departments. But over and above that, we find that the budget for national departments, almost 20% of their budget goes through transfers to provinces, to agencies, to municipalities. So in that way, you find that the committee not only focuses on national departments, but also goes down to provinces, especially when we look at the division of revenue pay. So in that way, we thought the work of the committee really spreads across government, at the national level, provincial level, as well as at the municipal level. And then the other feature is that this committee is legislated. It was created in terms of the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act. Unlike other committees that are created in terms of the rules of the House, this one is created in terms of the legislation. So whatever happens in this committee has got immediate legislative repercussions. For instance, I think when you go along with the presentation, there are issues of time frame. This has to happen at the time, and these people need to be involved. And if you keep one or omit one of those things, there could be legal implications. And then the other interesting feature is that the committee has got now powers to accept, reject, or amend the budget. I think members will remember that before the Money Bills Amendment for the Related Matters Act was passed in 2009, Parliament could only accept the budget. In principle, it could also reject the budget, because Section 77 and Section 3 of the Constitution provided that an Act of Parliament should be passed that will apply all the procedures that should be followed when amending the budget. Before then, that Act was not in place since the Constitution was configured in 1996. So Parliament could not tamper with the budget. National Treasurer will come with a proposal. Parliament could do everything, but then in the absence of that Act, there were no legislative powers to amend the budget because there were no procedures in place. Now we have that, but for now Parliament just needs to deal with the capacity, especially in the form of the Parliamentary Budget Office. But as we go along, I think the committee will see a number of stakeholders coming to submit, say, now we have the Act, now we have the Budget Office, we propose that this committee amend the budget. You know, maybe we need more money for this department, not that department, even for this program, not that program, and so on and so forth. And then the last issue that I want to talk about is that this committee has got a very important coordinating role, because we deal with appropriation of money. You find that now that we have powers to amend the budget, a political committee will get a proposal from a stakeholder saying they want a budget for basic education to be amended. Another portfolio committee, and so on and so forth. But all these portfolio committees, they need to come to this committee and say, these are the proposals for amendment that we want. And then this committee needs to mediate that process, because any move that we make in the budget has got a domino effect. You know, a lot of things can happen. There must be one stakeholder that can really mediate this process. So on the expenditure side, or on the application side, that is the role of the committee. And it is embedded in the management. Well, the other slide that I want to focus on right now is the main focal area for the committee throughout the budget process. In which stage of the budget process do we intervene to really get engaged? As you can see in that graphical illustration, the preparation process is there, or the drafting phase. We are not particularly involved there, because it is mainly the reserve of the executive, your budget council, your cabinet, the national treasurer, and so on and so forth. But portfolio committees, in a way, they do get involved in the form of the RRR budget, the
recommendation report.
Yeah, budget review and recommendation report. Those are both beautiful. I think that is an opportunity, a very unique opportunity that came with this money bill, that Parliament must get a way of influencing drafting this. Can't be that the drafting of the budget is only left to the executive. So it was thought that, okay, portfolio committees, because throughout the financial year, they look at the budget, the policies, and so on and so forth. So they can have an idea of how the budget can be configured, you know, from the perspective of the portfolio department that they are overseeing. So here they assess the budget and performance of the department for the rest of the year, and then they draft a report of the expenditure to the House, and then to the House go to the Minister of Finance and the Minister responsible, recommending that, okay, we are preparing the budget. We wish that maybe in the next financial year when table the budget, the budget looks like this based on these issues that we found. So in that way, it's an indirect, or I think it's a rather direct way of influencing the budget preparation process. But because we are not a portfolio committee, so we do not draft the triple R, so we are not particularly involved. Where we are most involved is the approval stage. That is where we appropriate money, look at the decision of revenue, and fiscal framework. I think I'll talk about that. And then we are also involved during the execution phase of the budget. This is where we check spending, pay for money, but I'll talk about this later. The evaluation process or the auditing phase, yes, we use the really rely on the reports from the auditor general, because the auditor general audits the financial statements of departments, as well as to see if they comply with the prescript or the PFA and so on and so forth. But we don't really analyze the annual report. That is the role of portfolio committee. But we use those documents, we use the document of the AC, but in terms of being involved in reporting on the annual report, that is what we really don't do. So the stages of the budget process that we're really involved in is approval and the execution. And then just to jump onto the approval stage. The approval stage for this committee, we basically begin with the medium term budget policy statement, which is the pre-budget statement or a mini budget, which lays the foundation for the annual budget. So for instance, in 2014, this budget that was tabled to 2014, the foundation was laid during the MCPTS of 2018. Because this is where the Minister of Finance comes and say, these are the MCEF priorities and allocating the proposed fiscal framework for the MCEF. So we have to, therefore we'll talk about that in detail, we have to consider MCEF and report on its value. We focus on the expenditure side, because the revenue side is mainly for the finance committee, where they're the standing on this event. But ours is on the expenditure side. And then, after the MCBCS in February, the budget is tabled in the House. That's where we really get involved. And then in October, the budget could be adjusted. Now, I think the KPMA provides for flexibility, as many that must be flexible, we don't just budget, and then things will remain like that. There are unforeseen circumstances. Department will want to shift funds. Within both, they want to have environment within both and so on and so forth, but there are rules to do that. So we look at the extent to which those rules were respected when departments shifted funds, because they request to the National Treasury that we would like to shift so much billions or millions from this program to that program. And then National Treasury will grant them the permission and say, okay, it's fine. But ultimately, they have to come to Parliament, because Parliament is the supreme, decision maker when it comes to the budget. So, because in February, we approved the budget. So any major change that happens in the budget must happen in consultation with Parliament. So the committee looks at that as well. But what I wanted to emphasize is that both the MCBCS and the adjustment process, they happen in October at the same time, but they are separate processes. So it's easy sometimes to confuse the two because they happen at the same time. But MCBCS, in my view, is the start because it prepares the ground for the annual budget, and then annual budget gets amended again in October. So only by the day, what are the main things that the committee deals with? Basically, there are three major documents or processes during the budget day. The first one is the fiscal framework, which really contains the basis for the entire budget, because it contains the fiscal envelope. From the how much is available from the revenue side, how much is available from the expenditure side, what is the deficit, what is the surplus, you know, and all those macroeconomic policies that underpin all the entire budget. So we look into that, we speak jointly with other committees, the finance committees, because before we focus on the expenditure side, we must know what is contained in the entire envelope, because it will have implications in what we do next. But as you see, there is no other putting to this piece for the fiscal framework, because we do not report on the fiscal framework as well. But we do jointly listen to the manager and engage, but in terms of reporting, that is the role of the finance committee, because I was mainly on the expenditure side. So once we have joined the met and discussed the fiscal framework, and then it has been dealt with by the finance committee, the role of the committee is to look at the division of revenue here. How is the money divided across and amongst the previous government? Is it equitable? Are the grants really configured the way you want them to be, and so on and so forth? So that is the first stage. But even here, we look at it, but it's not our core focus in a way. In a way, because the third committee, they really go into detail in engaging with the division of revenue. So we look at it, and then we report on it to the right recommendation, and then it gets sent to the NOP, and then the select committee goes to it thoroughly before it gets adopted. Ours is mainly on the appropriations bill. But even the appropriations bill, the select committee in the NOP, because we must concur. They also look at it, and then they pass it on to us, but then we go into detail. And I think they are very soon National Register will be coming to the committee and then briefing the committee about the appropriations bill, because it's very dealt with the fiscal framework at the start of the financial year, the division of revenue bill, the integrated, the voted on. The only one that is left is the one that appropriates money for national departments, which is the appropriations bill that will be dealing with. So when we engage with the budget, both the division of revenue bill and the appropriation bill, what is that exactly we use as our instrument of the committee, and what kind of questions we ask? The first one, I think, first and foremost, is the National Development Plan. Because anything and everything that has to be done now, from a policy point of view, from a budget point of view, must flow or support the NDP. So there's the start, and then I married the NDP with the medium-term strategy framework, because the medium-term strategy framework operationalizes the NDP. It gives you the medium-term targets and indicators and so on and so forth. So here we ask the question, is the budget aligned with the long-term goals of government? Because end of the day, it's an every department that wants its budget to be approved. It must indicate to a great extent how is this budget going to assist in achieving those priorities that are applied in the NDP. And then we also look at the State of the Nation address. State of the Nation address, because the president comes and tables the State of the Nation address, outline the key priorities of government and the key program and projects of government for this term or for this year. So we need to know what priorities, programs, and projects that were outlined in the zone prioritized in this budget. So we ask each and every department before we approve the report. We also go to the annual report, because annual report will give you a track record of each department. In the financial year, how did you perform? Have you been complying with the legislation? What does the auditor general say about your performance? Because somehow the performance of departments must be The allocation must be that against their performance. If you say the department does not have this money, it could be the pay on the basis of its performance. And the annual report provides good information in that regard. And then we have overnight reports, because the committee also conducts on-site visits Because what CC not want or the committee does not want is to just rely on numbers. Because as we alluded to earlier, the budget ultimately is about the people, it's about the deliver. So if you don't value for money, sometimes when you say the department will come with a very good presentation, the first 99% and so on and so forth, that project is going very well. But when you conduct a on-site visit, you find that things are just not being done as per the presentation. So you find those disconnects between what is happening on the ground and what is being presented in terms of the numbers. And then we look at past expenditure and performance information. I think that is covered. And then the strategic plan and annual performance plan. Because the budget must be underpinned by a plan. Sometimes one department wants a budget, but when it says there are no plans in place. And what happens is that the department was given or was allocated the budget without a good plan in place throughout the financial year, there will be serious issues with the implementation. Because if there's no good plan in place, then implementation will be affected as well. And then that's a synopsis of what creating initiative of revenue to really focus on. Basically, is the revenue divided equitably across or among the three spheres of government? Basically, is national government getting a center? Is provincial, the provincial sphere getting a center? The local sphere getting a center? You know, that the tax settlement by allocation that is in terms of conditional grants, because these fears they get an equitable share, they say that they are entitled to, so it's not attached to any condition. But all about that, there are conditional grants, different purposes for this conditional grant. But before we adopt a report on the division of revenue bill, we need to know how has this grant been performing? Because we find that yes, the grant allocated so much budget, but when you look at the past performance, it's been performing very, very bad. And when you maybe reach the new finance, people are complaining the issue of water here and there, health are broken. But you know, there is that grant that is responsible for fixing those issues and try and link it up to and say, but this grant is not performing. Maybe you need to reconsider it in this way. Because when we meet with the partners, the objective is to assist and say, what is the solution? How can we make this program or this grant work better? So those are the questions that we ask. And then we also look at the major changes in the grant. Because in the division of revenue bill, what we find each and every year, there are changes in the structure of grants. Sometimes other grants are terminated or discontinued for different reasons. And then sometimes we engage the national treasurer. For instance, we say, but no, the community does not feel that that grant should have been terminated because it was performing well, it has not achieved its objectives, you know. So sometimes the committee would advise the national treasurer, no, 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 we think that grant should continue. So just go and think you will receive it. Some grants are just, you know, made that they are put together because they feel that they actually meant for the same purpose. So for now, they are just all over the place and ever advance, you know, and not achieving their goal. And then, but one important thing on the division of revenue bill, I think it's required in the Act, in the Constitution, is the Finance and Fiscal Committee. And that is one body that the committee will have to liaise with when it comes to the division of revenue bill, because that is their core objective in terms of the finance. And I can't remember the legislation that creates the law.
Okay. In terms of the Intergovernmental Fiscal Framework Act.
Thanks. So the act is very specific. There is no way you can deal with the division of revenue without having consulted with the Finance and Fiscal Commission. They also make recommendations to the committee. I think it will make them some time during the year, but I think they are the committee that has a test with them during the strategic plan session. And then we have the budget. Once we've done the approval, then we have the budget execution. Basically, that is when wheels are moving now. Departments are implementing now. We want to see what is happening. So on one hand, we check expenditure performance.
On the other hand, because we have just one thing, allocated in this amount of money, how has it done, you know, in the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, how are you performing? Is there underspending? Is there overspending? Which program is contributing to this? What are the reasons and so on and so forth? But we also track service delivery performance because we want to merge the two. So your oversight duty comes to being. Also stay alert of what is being, because sometimes something, you know, they just happen and you don't know it's just here or the media. So we try and collect all that and say, okay, this department is going. Okay. And then the key instrument that we use during execution, we first and foremost, obviously the MGP and so on and so forth, but all the documents that are tabled as discussed of the financial year. Your strategic planning documents, your annual performance plans, your budget reviews, all the budget documents. Because the third plan, those are the plans. So whatever they do, it must not put the plan initially. This is what it has to do. So you will do, these were the targets, these were the deliverables. Are you meeting those deliverables? You know, because we don't want to wait until, you know, the end of the financial year, because it will be a post-mortem financial year. The horse will spoil several. So we check them on a constant basis, invite them to come and account to the committee throughout the financial year. And then use the second year to quota expenditure record. This is a report that is published by the National Treasurer. I think members have seen it part of the text. Each and every quota National Treasurer must produce this report. We collect all the information of the national department in terms of how are they performing and their spending. That is the most important document for the committee in terms of tracking spending. As we see as we go along. And then we have public hearing because the court department come and account, and then they get asked questions, they answer, and then that also forms the basis. And then we engage with other stakeholders, the public service commission, your human science research council, your financial and fiscal commission. Now we have the parliamentary budget office, and then we have civil society at large. We might have the people's budget campaign coming and say, okay, but we are observing that these things are happening. This is not how it's supposed to be. To the extent we hear that there are issues with children who don't have transport and so on and so forth. So we use that information from stakeholders. And we have on-site visits, off-site visits, you know, throughout the year. So it depends on the program in Parliament. And then we also rely on reports from other committees. I think from a research point of view, we just took a stance here so that we do not really work in silos. I think those are the constraints that I will talk to later, because one of the key things that in Parliament is trying to do is to make sure that committees work as a unit, they collaborate. Because what if one committee is dealing with one issue today, another committee is dealing with the same issue tomorrow? But let's go back to finding that is very important to this committee, but we do not know about that because we are busy with the program strategy. So it is for us as researchers, we can interact with our colleagues and say, oh, they're dealing with the department. What did you ask them? What transpired? Can you give me the presentation? Can you give me the responsibility? And then we use that information to inform the work of the committee through the research and through the interacting. And I must emphasize that as much as we do written research, but most of our work, we are normally in the say we are full soldiers because we are attached to the committee. On the day under the department, it is our role not to wait for members to say, hey, come and tell them, just give them perspective on this. We just want to tell them, but is there anything that can assist you with? I think this department is not giving the right answer here and there. So we keep on walking around over and above the written research document that we circulate. Because I'm not mind that some issues will never fulfill them in the presentation, but during the engagement, to realize, oh no, there are gaps here and there. So this is our duty to be on our toes, especially during the meeting. That is why we have to be present. And I think the committee is fortunate we have at least two researchers, a content advisor, and the two committee secretaries. Because even if one is sick or even if one is dead, another one is available. Other committees do not have that privilege. And then some common things that we have found in the past. Some general problems, the common problems that cut across departments. The first one is the issue of fetal dumping, what they normally refer to as the mice spike.
department, finance, they are not spending very well, but come the last course of the financial year, they are spending just skyrocket. And somehow, you know, there is no way in one course of the department could have spent so much money. You can foresee that in their annual report, there's issues of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure and so on and so forth. So those are the issues, but it also comes in a different form. Because as I mentioned earlier, you find that a department like human settlement, this budget for more than 70% is on transfer, less than 30% is operating within the department. So by the thing is that they don't have the money suddenly when they say this year is coming to an end. And because they say they understand, so they can transfer all the money to the provinces and municipalities, and then find that municipalities have their budgets for so much money, but they didn't plan for this money, they don't know how to spend it in the short space of time. So they kind of become scapegoats. So they dump it to them, and then when they come, they say, oh, they spend 100%, but what is the money to do? Because if there's money lying around, you know, there's a lot of problems that can be created. Look at the municipalities are accused and so on and so forth, but it's really not their problem. And then another, I think something that I've alluded to earlier is the issue of budgets being underpinned by inadequate planning. We have found instances of that. I think the accelerated school infrastructure delivery initiative, the building of schools in the Eastern Cape, that is a classical example where the community realized somewhere along the line that this problem was not underpinned by good planning. Money was allocated to the Department of Education, but there were no plans in place. Hence, the building of schools took some knocks in the process because, you know, if you put the horse, the cart before the horse will not be able to move. So there must be a plan first and a budget after, so that implementation can flow. And the other one, the disconnect between expenditure performance and performance target achievements. We have heard instances, I think that the stakeholder that really alerted the committee to this issue is PSC, if I'm not mistaken. They did a very interesting presentation. We have it on the orientation paper just a snapshot over these. The department will spend 100% in terms of the budget. But when you look at the target, the performance target, I think it's only maybe 40%. So there's a problem. The budget is being spent on the one hand, but the targets are not being met. Sometimes when the department, there could be an extreme case, spend 100%, but we feel to me that there are problems, the schools are not set really on time and so on and so forth. So that is the kind of disconnect that that is why we have oversight, visit, engagement with stakeholders who reside in those areas, so that will have a broader, a holistic view of what is happening. But that is one of the problems that the committee has found to be like a culprit. And then there's I think it's the same point, the connect between the project performance and actual delivery, where you go through the on-site visit to find that, well, this problem is not even running, but when they reported, they said all these good things. And then the practical constraints, this is my last slide before the last. Not some of these, because every function institution will have its own constraints, you know, it's part of the process. So we have a problem of late to receive top information from department. That really puts a committee in a difficult position because information is the basis for the function of any committee of parliament, you know, particularly on the budget. You must have information beforehand. When there's information, a presentation on the eve of the meeting or during the meeting, then you have no basis to really engage, you know, adequately. So in that way, I think this is an area where the committee must just, you know, defend and say, department must provide, if we will have an engagement and have presentation and document, provide them 3 or 4 days prior. You know, so I think the committee secretary will advise the members accordingly on that one. And then the issue of collaboration, I emphasize the importance of collaboration, especially this committee and COPA, because COPA is a very important committee in the budget process. But to find that
We don't know much about that. They have decided all matters and what not. For some time, we deal with the decision of revenue bill, we make recommendations, and the select committee on appropriation does the same. But none of the two committees are aware of what the other committee says in terms of their recommendations. But all the reports go to the House and run a risk of having conflicting recommendations. And end of the day, they have to go to the executive, the minister, and the minister will see that but Parliament is giving me a recommendation that, you know, so that kind of collaboration is the most difficult thing about it. Sometimes problems of stress of committees. And then members have got other meetings, study groups, you know, and so on and so forth. But we, as researchers, as support staff, we have a responsibility to liaise with our counterparts and get all those documents and bring them to the attention of members during the meeting. And then this issue, it's not a really deep in the alignment of financial years. As you know, the financial year of national and provincial accounting starts on 1 April onwards. Whereas that of a local government municipality is 1 July, you know. So sometimes it creates confusion. So sometimes we are engaged on the first quarter, and the next department will refer to the municipality. And then so the members know we are still busy with the fourth quarter, so we can't talk about the first quarter. We have not started our first quarter. Sometimes the entire department will transfer a budget or during the first quarter, only to find that they have nothing because they are here with the budget of the fourth quarter. So when we had a very talk to Uganda last year with the committee, one of the staff there an interesting finding. We found that they arrived to a point where they just reconciled the financial year, you know, of all these different tiers of government. But I understand perhaps they have got a different thing. There are different imperatives that inform the current configuration in our country. So, but it's not just an interesting, some of the things that we pick up when we support the committee. And then the issue of tight frames, I think a colleague will talk about that. The tight frames as outlined or stipulated in the Management Act, they are very clear what needs to happen. If you think you're going to amend the budget, you're going to have a clear headache because the tight frames are very, very tight. They don't really allow the scope. I heard at some point that Parliament is engaged in the process of reviewing the Act with a view of trying to relax the time frame so that Parliament can really effective. If it wants to, it can amend the budget. It will not be constrained by the time frame and so on and so forth. But then on the positive note, as I am about to hand over to my colleague, the most advantageous thing now for the committee that it has not one mandate has happened last time. I think it was November 2011, the committee was given an extra mandate to oversee the NYCA and the Department for Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. So as much as we are an appropriation committee, we have to juggle through and try and oversee this. So it was really, as I said, time frames are very high as it is. So when we had another department, but it was an interim arrangement, but it has since then been addressed. It came in NYDA with the TDSA, so that committee that is responsible for TDSA is overseeing those. So now the committee is just focusing on the core mandate in terms of the Act. And then now we have the Parliamentary Budget Office, you know, the institution that is created in the Act to capacitate Parliament. Because back then it was just researchers and they're not supposed to be here. They don't have time to go and do like your tara primary research. Because when the committee is here, it must be here and so on and so forth. So, but now we have the benefits of the budget office. They will be providing us with insight and so forth. I think during their presentation, even during the session, they will outline the way in which they are assisting the committees. Because currently, they are focusing on their core mandate, which is to support the new four committees that are dedicated to the budget project. And then we have the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. This is a very interesting development because now the committee will be in a position to try and marry expenditure information and the actual performance of programs, the impact of programs, because they evaluate, they pay for instance EPWP and evaluate the past affairs.
how has it been performing? Has it really been making impact on the ground, you know? Because when you say this problem has not get so much money, it must be on the basis of how it has affected, you know, the recipients, you know, the people. So, but they also do on-site surprise visits as well. Go to the Department of Police and look at the police station, case how now the operation are really providing the credit, as they say, you know, analysis performance plan and so on and so forth. And then on the basis of that, they write a report. That report really assists the committee in terms of when we engage with the department, because there's a very thin line between budget and policy. It's two sides of the same coin. And then lastly, as I indicated earlier, you have the benefits of this dedicated support staff, which is a support staff. This is, I think, the highest agency number. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Could we maybe allow for some engagement before we go to the next one? Is that fine?
For the presentation, I think that really it's an eye-opener and it's really very important for us as new members in the corporate community. I wanted to check, the responsibility to know whether the revenue has been divided equally to different states of government, the department. But what is surprised at the committee to know that the revenue is distributed equally. They write them. They should be looking at to say that the state has to say that this particular state is supposed to get so much piece of cake and so on and so forth. You also indicated the issue of the grant to say that maybe sometimes you can cancel the grant because you don't see the need of it. It was just interesting, but it is not very true. That grant maybe you were supposed to say that it must be cancelled. But what I want to check, how do you differentiate when you take a decision to cancel the grant? The grant table means whether the grant is table means well. Or it is because of the non-importance of the grant, or it is not performing due to the lack of capacity. How do you reach the conclusion? Because if the grant may be negative, but the people that are supposed to implement it know that there is an outcry of a institution, lack of capacity. How do you come to a conclusion that no? It is because the grant is not a holy word or the grant is not needed, whereas there is a challenge of the lack of capacity. And slide 11, Honorable Chair, fiscal dumping. It indicated the issue of the fiscal dumping. I want to say, is there no guideline from the Treasury to say by specified date all the subjects should have been made so that you could really prevent that? This has jumping in those particular local for the partner. If there is, why is not being implemented? If there is not, because it has been a trend of this particular problem, why do we come up with the recommendation to the federal to say maybe they must take guidelines so that we prevent this jumping? And lastly, only on the same thing, you indicated the issue of the financial years, that they are not the same in the local government. Is not the issue also that is affecting the spending trend of the department, that when they need to transfer money to the local state, you find that the financial year conflict, you know, and then it leads to them not really spending, as they are saying the example of the human settlement that 70% for transfer, you know. Is it not something that is affecting that you ever check what is the real problem of the understanding in regards to the local municipality vis-a-vis the national government and provincial government. And on the last one, a late receipt of information from the department, you have correctly indicated that it disempowers us as members to really engage and contribute during the meeting. an activity partner. But what's the cause of this? Because the negative trend is coming from those areas in 20 years of democracy now. And this is a problem that is facing. What is the negative done to try and correct this situation of the latest people? And what was the result of it, if there was a result, or something that has been raised and continuing, and what needs to be done? Thank you. The issue of the presentation, I don't know what slide is, looking at it with my colleague here. He said in the start of the year, or in 10, he talks about going to maintain the start of the year. What do you mean the start of the year? Do you mean January or do you mean the start of the financial year? Thank you.
The team is taking note. You will respond to that.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine is on page 7 and page 6. The appropriation is here. Just a question. You talk about thank you, please, send me the report. Can you just clarify that I did not get it all away? On page 11 and page 10. Covered this one, we were discussing the end of the year and the transition year. So on page 12, on page 11, I want to support my colleague with regards to the guidelines. You know, this issue of physical dumping, I'm going to have them towards the end of the year, but are there no guidelines? Because as far as I remember, each and every department or the municipality, they need to have plans. And these plans are sent to national government. And they need to give the money to the municipality or to the provincial government according to the plan. But now if they are just something towards the end of the year, it means that each plan are not considered. The last one is on page 10. You indicated that there are difficulties in collaborating with other departments, especially SCOPA. What is your recommendation to this committee? Thank you.
Thank you. First of all, an informative and a very good presentation that would also make it simple and well to understand. So once again, thanks for the work that has been done by the support committee. So his last statement was very well saying that this is a support committee. Most of my issues or questions for clarification have been dealt with, but let me just not start repeating anything. On the six, obviously your fiscal framework is your revenue and your government spending. I'd just like to know, at most times there is a deficit. Is there any limit on the deficit that government is allowed to pay in terms of the budget, when they prepare budget? It's obviously known that you end up with a substantial deficit. Also on page 8, the honourable member that first also covered that. But my question is slightly different to how that is determined. My question is why does a grant dependent have to suffer as a result of the grant not being sent properly, which obviously is not their fault? So that is my question with regards to that. That the people suffer as a result of incompetence problems. And then,
issue of
the request is with regard to the department entity. In your view, would you say that it is correct for this committee when it does oversight to get into contact with the department entity via the department, respond to the department, or should we go direct? My worry would be, you know, if this committee were to simply go direct to the entity, it would look like undermining the response to the department. But at the same time, we would want these entities to really perform in terms of their mandate and achieve their targets. And I must say that from the observation one is making the committee one as well, some of them have not been doing a good job. The second area I want to check is you cited the Uganda experience. I wanted to understand whether the previous scope has probably made any recommendations to probably make a treasury with regard to alignment between the districts, or if there are difficulties at all in terms of ourselves aligning our budgetary processes between the first year, what exactly are our challenges? Or is simply a party that we have been going on and we have been looking? There are issues to be there. I think that with regard to documents not reaching committee in time, sometimes, I think that we must insist on the use of IT available. The committee secretary, yourself, have three cards available yourself. It is, I think, on our part is to insist on department to transfer this information on time to the district secretary of yourself. Increasing the use of courier services where documents are bulky, because sometimes they are duplicated. But we'll have to look into the area and follow it up quite close. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Once again, let me commend the support team. I think you did a fantastic job. Thank you very much. One of my concerns is the quarterly expenditure report. I just wanted to ask you whether we rely solely on the National Portfolio Committees to respond to us in terms of whether the budgets are being spent timely or not, or do we, or what mechanism have we got in place to ensure that it's happening provincially and at a local level as well. But more than that, I have a little bit of a concern. And a lot of these requests will be coming from the ground, from the municipal level to provincial level, to the national level portfolio committee to us. Now, I'm not sure if we have a system in place in terms of a budget. And I'm going to give you an example to try and make it easier. But I just want clarity. I've experienced this problem, and that's why I wanted some clarity on it. That sometimes items are budgeted for. I don't know what mechanism people on the ground are using in terms of budgeting for a particular project. But you find out that when that project now goes out, sometimes there are people that are not allocated these projects because they are too cheap. So my concern is, how do we, or what system has we got to ensure that when they budget, that is in line with current market-related rates and things. Otherwise, what tends to happen is sometimes people create a budget for a particular project which might be very hard. It will come through to province, come through to national, come through to us, we will approve it in everything. Whereas that particular contract could have been done at, say, 10% or 40%, cheap or lower. And I have found this, where companies have been generally not given the job because they're too cheap, not because they can't do the job, and refuse the company. So it clearly shows that the budgeting system is a problem, because they're budgeting too high
initially, okay, and allocating that job accordingly, whereas we could have saved a lot of money. But that's my concern. So I don't know if you could respond to that.
Thank you very much. Then I'll ask the team to respond. You can allocate amongst yourself.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Thank you for the opportunity as well. If I may start with the last question, as it's still so fresh on my mind. The issue that Honorable Member is raising on cost, and you find that in terms of procurement, the solutions you adopt are very expensive. What happened, for example, in the past when we went to Limpopo for water infrastructure, we found that municipalities, because of a lack of capacity in some instances, they tend to delegate responsibility of coming up with the specification in terms of what they need, in terms of pipes, water pipes and the water infrastructure that's required in the community to consultants. What happens is that the consultants will develop high technology solutions which are in all likelihood not sustainable in terms of where these municipalities are situated and the budget that they have. And the result of that is that the infrastructure will be put in place at high cost, but when it comes to maintenance, officials are not there because the capacity is not there at the moment to when the piece of equipment breaks down to be able to do it. They'll have to go back again to the specific consultant to install the machine in the first place. So that is an issue of capacity at local government level, but also linked to that, the Water Research Commission, when we discussed with them, was the regulation that applies to the water sector planning and the requirements in terms of the solutions you have to adopt for the treatment of sewage and so on are so strict that it's not always easy to adopt low technology solutions. So in that regard, what will be required is the dialogue and interaction at local government level in terms of the capacity that is in place and what is that you are able to do. And at national level, in terms of the application of regulation, if there is some way where it can allow for low technology solutions to the water infrastructure problem, that will lead to sustainability. There's the question on the planning at local government level. If I go back to the first question on how we determine equitability, The honest assessment, and this has been rated by international experts and observers out there, is that we do have a fairly competent national treasure. National treasure. So when they do table a decision of revenue and they allocate shares to the national sphere, the provincial sphere, and the local sphere, attached in a documentation of decision of revenue, they would include explanations in terms of if they taken into account the population numbers of each state of health in each of the provinces, the poverty component in terms of people employed in each of the provinces and those who are unemployed, and all of that is contained in the bill itself when it's paper. They will also take into account the fiscal capacity of each of the provinces, and in case they don't get right, the FSCs, who are also our very important partners in this, they will indicate at the table of 50% of revenue that in this instance, probably this is not correct. So the community can pick it up and recommend accordingly. That's for the distribution of revenue. In terms of the question on cancelling of the grant, or if there are very serious issues about a specific grant, I'll give an example. In the previous financial year, we had the rural household infrastructure grant, which the committee felt very strongly for the past 3 years that's been underperforming very seriously. I believe only 10% was spent of the grant on average. And said that because of it is a direct grant, a direct grant meaning the national department would make the transfer, but the responsibility of implementation lies at where the transfer is made to. So it is made to the municipality, they would receive the money and implement. And the committee said that actually the National Department of Human Settlements in the case is abdicating responsibility because of some of the feel they want to relocate the responsibility of implementing this program of free to the local government level so as to not take the blame. That was the perception that the committee has. And they recommended that this grant, instead of it being a direct grant, it should rather be an indirect grant. Indirect grant would be that the National Department would implement on behalf of the municipality and the municipality would take over afterwards. In response to that, it's also included it's not in the presentation, but it's in the budget review book. The National Trust decided to rather have a combination of both. You will have a direct component within the grant, you will also have an indirect component within the grant. So direct component will be transferred to the municipality if they do very well, that is fine. The indirect component would allow them, in case of when the National Department is on site at local level to implement the program and there are challenges, they can shift money to the direct component where the money can be spent. To the fiscal ramping. Okay.
I don't get this word. It's like maybe it does say that the committee change decision based on the national community that we are doing. Because you talk about the perception that there was a perception that maybe to have a bit. But as a study committee, do we have a right to get the real reason? So that when you take a decision, we take an informed decision, not just a perception and only seeing it on paper, not saying without knowing the exact reason, because we take another decision and then again it will have a negative implication again because we don't know exactly the reason that caused the underperformance of understanding. We have that right in this committee when we take a decision because they will report the department, the national department, and we look at the, but we don't know what is the problem in the local municipality. And then again, we say, we give it to them, we say, send the local municipality and the national department, and we find the same problem.
Thanks so much for that question. The word perception, I admit, is not correctly used. The decision, and that's the default procedure, yes, the computer has a right to interpret and get the underlying reason of why it's there in underperformance. The underlying reasons in this instance were the expenditure performance of the grant itself, the submissions made by the National Department of Housing, and some of the municipalities were impacted and they indicated that they have challenges as well in terms of accessing the grant on time and support the check from the national here.
I think just to add on that, the committee also consulted FSC, Colin Saga, and the department to engage further and hear Saga's view and hear FSF's view. Like they submitted papers in terms of recommendations on whether they want to cause for the understanding on the ground and what could be the solution to expedite spending.
On fiscal dumping, I think I have. Can I just add on the development part? In 2011-12, the Minister of Finance then announced that the setting of the budget framework would be underpinned by fiscal guidelines, which would entail one counter-cyclicality, which means that when the economy is not doing so well, the government will intervene, and also that the expenditure of government will not entail unlimited debt. And based on that, it follows then that it guides the deficit to at least remain within an average of 5% or so. So it does based on those guidelines.
And then with regards to fiscal dumping and guidelines, what National Treasury has done with the division of revenue, especially in income transfers, there are conditions that they set out for the transferring officer and the receiving officer from the part of the department. Like, for instance, some conditions will say there must be a payment, the payment schedule, whereby you detail and submit the payment schedule to National Treasury to say, we'll make a transfer in March, we'll make a transfer in April, we'll make a transfer, like in quarterly, for instance, or monthly. And then in terms of the receiving officer, which is maybe a province or the municipality, the conditions will set out that that receiving officer must first submit a business plan for spending that specific grant. So for the committee, in order to be able to monitor that, it would be to check the grant framework for that specific grant if there is suspected fiscal dumping, and then to check with the receiving officer whether those business plans were submitted and whether the conditions, the payment plan was submitted to National Treasury. The committee would communicate with National Treasury to find out if everything was done in accordance with the grant framework. So that's fiscal dumping in terms of transfers. Then another thing that I'm going to talk about is around collaboration with other committees. I think the honor is on the supporting staff to speak to our counterparts, because we engage with them and we hear, okay, this is the program and this is what's happening, and from there then we can bring that to the members. So I think we just need to like speak more with our counterparts from other committees. And sometimes when we invite the department, like it has been enough for the committee to, if for instance we're going to be seeing the Department of Basic Education, then we'll invite the portfolio committee to come and be part of that meeting so that they are aware of the issues that we're raising with the department, and then they can follow up with some of the issues from their side, because we've got other departments that we deal with. So that collaboration.
I think most questions have been answered, but I'll just take those that have not been answered. On the one, there was a question about why do grants, recipients have to suffer because grants are not performing properly. I would say, you know, that is always a dilemma for good committee, because sometimes you find that the committee wants to arrive to a decision where it says, why don't we have terminated this progress? Because it's basically not working, you know. But on the other hand, it says, but there are people that are beneficiaries for this program, you know. So we are always faced with that, you know, dilemma, because we have to balance the two. You know, maybe that's to give a perspective. Those are some of the things that we really, I think the committee went into these countries last year, Kenya. So we like, they had this hardcore approach of faith. If the problem is not performing, that's the minute. And members will say, but what happens, for instance, say a program of health is not performing, they're supposed to buy medicine for hospitals, and that's the minute. What happens to the patients in the hospitals? And you can say, maybe, no, there are departments that are not so critical like health and education, but the issue is government is a unit, you know. You can think transport is not important, but an ambulance has to go through the road to transport those medicines. Those, you know? So that's the balancing act. That is why the committee always tries to bring stakeholders on board and find an amicable solution of how this program has to be implemented one way or the other. Because at the end of the day, it's about the people. It's not about whether the DG or someone who is being seen as not performing. So this is the dilemma, I think, that we will be fitted with as we go forward. I think that's the reason why we have come to in the first place. And then the other one, the alignment if there was any recommendation, I will be honest, it's not an issue that we have really, really raised. But, you know, it's one of the issues that we encounter this problem as researchers. We want to find information of the first reason. But if you think about it, at some point we must alert the committee about this. So there has not been a recommendation, you know. However, some people may also, maybe it's an academic debate for now, you know, but from the research side, I think it's kind of a trend that we point, picked up, and we told ourselves that at some point we'll have to discuss with the members, and then we'll see where it goes. And then, well, the financial, the slide they spoke about the start of the year, years, yeah, then it was my oversight year, it was supposed to be financial year, I was referring to financial year. And then, do we only rely on the departmental information in terms of, like, the expenditure, performance, how did they perform? Yeah, because the HMA, for instance, entrusts the National Treasury, like the custodian of public finances, to get all information from departments, because at the end of the day, the information of performance or expenditure size of the department, you know, no matter how you get to know about it, but the first court call is this department. So, but to make the work of the committee easy, National Treasury assumes that role of consolidating that information, but they verify, you know, they definitely go to the extent to make sure that information that is provided by departments is extreme. Sometimes you find that the expenditure report comes a little bit later than expected, and then when you inquire the National Treasury will tell you that we are still verifying the information, because at the end of the day, the information that has to be before Parliament, it has to be accurate, it has to be reliable. We have found very, very, I can't remember an instance where maybe information that was taken by National Treasury was proved in correct. So they really play a very huge role in that regard. But over and above this, to listen to other stakeholders, you know, your civil society, your PSE, mental health cancer, and so on and so forth, is to just try and be as inclusive as possible. Luckily, the parliamentary body office is here. So now they don't have capacity, they have about what, I think, 8 analysts for now, but they are saying they will grow over time, you know. So perhaps at some point, you don't know, maybe they will assume a role, because, I mean, our system is different. In the United States, you find that their congressional body office, it actually serves like the National Federal Parliament. It basically does own modeling, you know, it creates its own assumptions. Sometimes it even counter the information of the National Treasury, you know, but it's a developed country, it's based on their presidential system, their environmental system, so there are all those issues. But, you know, I'll say maybe this is an ideal situation, but I hope that every so far the PBO will also, you know, come in handy, you know, for the community. Yeah, I think those were some of the issues that were there. Yeah, thank you.
Can I just
ask? We will take the last question of Honorable Shop. Then we'll conclude the session both at the panel. Let me take that and then you can answer.
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, I'm not asking a question. I was just making an observation. Because you see, especially on the issue of this committee having a main decision to do away with certain grants in the past. I am just suggesting that, you know, as this committee, we are not like all the other committees in Parliament. This is the very central committee. It is actually the committee that actually dish out the report to department. I was suggesting that, you know, this idea of people making decisions seated in this world, the decision may not be as informed as we would like to be. I'm suggesting that this committee should actually not sit all the time in Parliament, should go to provinces. We should also have a situation where we always have somebody from together with ourselves, because we can actually verify then
we had this experience in sometimes when I was still in the group. We sat in a different part of the province, and we found that we actually discovered a lot of stakeholders who will not otherwise be able to reach you to this information to come to this, because we've got to bear in mind that we had as a committee the other responsibility of public participation. But since I came to this legislature, this parliament, I observed that it's only the rich, the learned, and the resource who are able to actually reach parliament. The ordinary people who need resources on the ground are never able to be anywhere near a committee. And yet committees of parliament are supposed to be open. That's my humble contribution.
Thanks, there was only one question that wasn't answered. The one with regards to NCOP.
Okay, I think I can do that when we go through the budget process, because we need to ask the link.
Okay, any last response from your side, and we'll move to the budget cycle.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just wanted to touch on the whether we can invite entities. Yes, we can. Every government entity that receives funding from the National Revenue Fund, which is what we will be dealing with when we deal with the appropriation, this committee can interrogate the performance of that entity. For example, the NYDA is a public entity. If a community feels that we need to speak to them on performance and so on, we can be invited. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Okay, I'm going to go through the budget cycle and budget process, and Darren is supporting me. Okay, that's the budget cycle. It's just showing a picture of what Musa has already spoken about in terms of the actual budget process begins in October with the medium-term budget policy statement. And it so happens that that goes along with the adjustment budget, but also portfolio committees, like you mentioned, look at budget recommendations, and they will make recommendations for the next budget cycle, and then it starts again with State of the Nation National Budget, and those are basically all the documentations that are in front of you. So when the national budget is tabled, it will be with the Estimate of National Expenditure, that's the big red book that's in front of you members. And then it will be the budget review, that's the other red book. And then it will be the Division of Revenue Bill and the Appropriation Bill, all of that is in the pack. And then obviously then the budget execution, which is media continuous monitoring and the expenditure reports. Then the actual budget progress, it emanates from the Money Bills Act. I was just looking mainly at time frames and what the act says that the committee must do during the budget process. So obviously it all starts with the tabling of the national budget, which the Minister of Finance must do in February usually, and that according to Section 7 of the Money Bill Act, and those are the documents that I've highlighted that the Minister will table, but that also includes the fiscal framework and revenue proposals, which we don't, which Musa mentioned that we don't deal with those. Then from there, the fiscal framework and the revenue proposals are then referred to the Standing Committee on Finance and the Select Committee on Finance, and they will have a joint meeting when they deal with that with both, and then we will join and be part of, like Musa mentioned, and then the Standing Committee on Finance, they will do their report, and then it will be debated in the National Assembly, and then it will go to the NCOP, and the NCOP will have their report, which goes to the NCOP thereafter. So the Select Committee's report does not go to the National Assembly, it will go to the NCOP, but there needs to be collaboration between the two committees so that the recommendations are not are not classic, the recommendations will go to the minister from the houses. And then the Standing Committee on Finance and Select have 16 days after the tabling of the national budget to finish that process. And then thereafter, once the fiscal framework has been debated, then they will get the ball rolling in terms of the Division of Revenue Bill, which is referred to this committee. And then we have 35 days after the adoption of the fiscal framework to process the Division of Revenue Bill. And according to the Act, we must consult HSC and any other stakeholders, then the committee at its discretion will, for instance, maybe get the Public Service Commission or the HSRC, or even like some departments and municipalities to determine readiness to implement certain grants. And then if the committee wants to amend the Division of Revenue, they must, within the 35 days, you must give 3 days to the Minister of Finance to respond to the proposed amendment. Now, all those, if you look at the time frame as set out in the Act, it might look like the committee has lots of time, 35 days, like a month or over a month, but when you take into account the parliamentary program, we don't have 35 days. At most, I think experience has shown that we have probably from the tabling of the national budget till we done with the Division of Revenue, we have 2 weeks to do it.
Chairman, can I just come in there? I've written down the dates here for this year during the budget process, but the tabling happened on the 26th of February, after which the fiscal framework and the legal proposals were referred to the Select and Standing Committee on Finance. They debated the fiscal framework and the legal proposals on the 11th of March. Remember, this committee can only deal with the Division of Revenue according to the legislation after the fiscal framework has been passed. Now, it referred to the committee on the 12th of March, and it was debated on the 13th of March. So when we talk about tight time frames, we really do mean it. But what this committee has done in the past, we would make it sort of a due process. While the finance committees are dealing with the fiscal framework, we start going in the stakeholders, but not officially, but we are actually discussing. We normally call them in. We do discuss the Division of Revenue, but we also link it with the court rate extension. So the Division of Revenue is extensively dealt with in the NCOP. So after the NA has tabled the report, it's related to the NCOP. That's where the 6-week cycle will come. But members should just bear in mind that all of this, it's all dependent on the parliamentary program. So if the program from Parliament said to us, deal with it within 1 day or 2 days, then we just have to do it. So I just wanted to sensitize the members about it. And now for the appropriations, both the debate is scheduled for the 21st of July.
Ladies and what you should do is to say this is a normal process. Under normal circumstances, and then we're able to say, but this year, because there was an election, we have lost this time, and this is where we are. So we cannot have the 35 days and all things. So that we are a bit in an abnormal situation, but it's important to take us through the normal situation. It's under normal circumstances where the budget is tabled in February, this is what happened. But because we lost that period from April, May, that was 2 months, which we should have processed all these things, this would be the trigger. And I think that's what Darren said, that we may not have the kind of time that I might be the test. So we will then have a clear sense of
where we are exactly now as we speak.
All right. So then the committee dealt with the Division of Revenue in March, and then now we've got the Appropriations Act. The Appropriations Act was, or the Appropriations Bill was also referred to the committee in March. However, because of the election and end of fourth parliament, the bill left and then was revived last week. So for that revival, then it is referred to the committee, and that's what we have at hand and which will be processing. But according to the Money Bills Act, the Appropriations Bill is tabled together with the national budget. So you have it from the tabling of the national budget, and according to the bill, you have 4 months after the start of the financial year to process the Appropriations Bill. So it would be before the end of July, it has to be finalized. The norm for the committee is usually the Appropriations Bill is debated in June in the National Assembly before constituency period. So then we wouldn't be dealing with it in July. It would have been finalized by June normally. And so that usually gives us the month of May to deal with the Appropriations Bill. And according to that, then we will facilitate public participation. What usually happens is we'll issue an advert in all 11 official languages, different newspapers calling for submissions on the bill. And the committee receives submissions, then we'll schedule public hearings with the members of the committee. In the past, I think last year, for instance, we dealt with EdLife Africa, who made a submission on the budget of the Department of Energy. So then the committee will engage, and then we'll include those engagements in the report and the recommendations of the committee. And then according to the Money Bills Act, the committee also must consider input from other portfolio committees. It's like on things like conditional and statistical exclusive appropriations for a subdivision within a vote. The portfolio committee would make recommendations to the standing committee on finance, on appropriations, and then we will look at that, and also we must allow for a response from the minister of that specific department. So we'll call the department and say the portfolio committee is saying this, that not to present on that, and then we'll incorporate those recommendations as part of the committee report. And then if the committee wants to amend the appropriation bill, the Minister of Finance should be given 10 days to respond to the proposed amendment. That's it for my side.
Given this process now, portfolio committees are currently busy with processing the budget of the various departments. So after they have finalized, the EPC will commence the standard public committee, where by the way, we'll be getting all the budget votes. Once the budget votes have been updated, it can be asked to adopt our appropriation, the report on appropriation. So we are hoping to consider the first draft report on the 16th of July. We are hoping to adopt it. If there's nothing wrong, we'll probably adopt it on the 2nd of July in order for it to be adopted, to be debated on the 1st of July, which is on Friday. Okay. Any comments on this one? Report. Report. What's the next secret? The fee.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe let me suggest one of the members wants to cut some fee. We do it. Could you find me? Yeah, grab tea, come there. Sit down, and once we enjoy tea, then come to me. Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
We want to be out of here by 12:45.
Okay.
You must present like a real specialist. What? Just to take honorable members, because we still have a threat session coming. Some of these things will be coming back to them. So if you can just come through, allow members to have time to comment before 1 o'clock.
Okay. Thanks so much, Chair Shepherdson. Thanks so much, honorable members. I will speak to the themes, I will speak to the mandate of the committee, and I will touch on aspects of the Managing Act. Themes in public finance globally. On this slide, the first point is that growth will not be as high as anticipated in South Africa and in a lot of developing economies as well. And then to any reform aimed at reducing spending, research indicates that it's three areas that one should focus on. The first one is on compensation of the employees, which is always a very big one, and also spending on social services. And looking at attaining spending efficiencies in terms of value delivered the program for government, and also fortunately for Parliament, as most of it mentioned, the establishment of the parliamentary budget offers that enhancement of capacity also a bit. The second slide, this one, I just illustrate this point. Efficiency will increasingly become a major part of how we budget in South Africa. The IMF surveyed international experience in terms of what has been the actual experience of countries when they have to cut budgets and so on, and they interviewed some of the officials involved in this process. What they say is that it is very, very painful, and it is very difficult to innovate when you are under severe pressure. So essentially, it needs the mandate of the committee, especially now, it becomes very, very important. I'll give an example why. When the Minister of Finance tabled the budget, it gave growth projection at 2.7% for South Africa. What has happened since then? Growth has declined in the first quarter by 0.6%. The rating agency has downgraded the economy, so we're going to pay more in terms of debt service cost, and our growth is estimated at 1.7%. All of that, it means that when the Minister of Finance tabled the budget in February, whatever estimate that is going to be money that's receiving for this year, and given that we are using an MTEP budgeting framework, there were also estimates for how much we will have in 2015. It means it's going to be less. So there will not be additional money. So the budget is going to reprioritization, spend less and spend less. That's the important part from that slide. Moving on to the next slide. These are just some of the trends and sort of a history of budgeting in South Africa. Essentially, the fiscal guidelines, I did refer to them earlier. The important part is that for now, it cannot be that spending from consumption, and then we use debt to fund the consumption, then we leave our future children with enormous debt to deal with. And also the outcomes approach that has been, was adopted in 2009, and some of the highlights when Minister of Finance announced the budget in February, emphasis was placed on the community works program and on the rail network and public infrastructure. I'll go to the next slide. The NDC, it has been covered. The cost containment measures, these were announced last year by Cabinet in October.
The Minister of Finance issued an instruction note in January this year. The department will be audited on the cost containment measures. What have you done? There should be consultant reduction plan should be in place. Travel should be limited to three officials who come to present to Parliament. Only three, and flying should be limited to economy class only. So those are some of the measures there. Okay, Chief Procurement Officer is very important and highlighted by the Minister of Finance and also the President as well in the case of traditional drive. And of course, shift depending away from consumption to capital is very important. I'll move on to the next slide. This also illustrates that really the task at hand, what needs to happen. Government has been building houses since 1994, but the outcome is that the backlog in 2013, the backlogs now, are still the same as the backlogs in 1994. So we really need to think how we, the allocation of resources and the program directed to the eradication of backlogs in housing. Infrastructure expenditure, the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Council estimates the program in place now. Expenditure is projected at 4 billion rand for the next 15 years. KPMG did an analysis and other research institutions as well. And the finding was that if we are able to attain the objectives of the NDP of the infrastructure spending at 10% of GDP, 4 trillion is not enough. We will need 6.5 trillion more on top of the 4 trillion for the next 15 years. So it gives us some perspective on the prioritization and emphasis on value for money. And just at the last line on slide 20, in 2009, additional allocations constituted 7.4% of the budget for this year, but now additional allocations from additional revenue is only 1.2%. So the space to move is becoming very, very small. So now I think that is, I just leave that slide. The president did emphasize economic growth has 5% and also education expanding access and EBWT, CWP as well, and also did touch on the enhancing the procurement systems across government. So I'm sure one of my mother's seen it since the onboarding session on the on oversight and what the constitution says about that. And I will leave that 22 and go to 23. We shall oversight as well. The constitution, the PSMA, the money gives. There is a question earlier asked by an honorable member on terms of where do we get this information for expenditure only the department. Yes, it is law. On that slide, if you go to the last bullet section 32, that at the end of each month there must be a report on expenditure, and also section 44, government institutions must submit explanations if you have overspent and underspent, and why is that so. The money is at slide 24. Colleagues did explain on that, most have touched on that, that budgeting now is basically changed, it is a negotiation between the legislature and the executive. Okay, slide 25. The money deal section 4 establishes the four.
Okay.
The comment just made about negotiation.
Okay, by negotiation, it entails that for, let me give an example. In the MCGTS, the Minister of Finance would come and say, these are the plan proposals, this is what we need to fund, these are the core priorities. The committee will consider that and then apply their mind to that. And if then there's an instance where it probably does not fully agree or partially agree or so on, it will make a recommendation. That recommendation will need to be responded to by the minister officially, and it comes in this, it's part of the package that comes to the minister in February, and at the end of the school, he explains how he has accommodated what the committee recommends in the budget and tabling at that point in time. So there is certain interaction which was not in place before the enactment of the money bill. Slide 25,
Okay, the money establishes these four committees, the two committees on finance, and then the committee on appropriations. And that's highlighting the act refers to spending issues. If one is to define what is spending issues, it affords this committee a broad, very broad scope in terms of where they can interrogate and assess whether government is really attaining its objective. If we go to slide 26, any issues or causes issues of failing for money is cut across the public service. In terms of the input when you purchase your furniture, ICT, the starting as well, there needs to be principles of economy, efficiency and effectiveness. And also the transformation of those inputs into output, there will have to be principles of economy, effectiveness and efficiency. And also the output themselves, they will have to exhibit those triple E. And also on top of the triple E, there has to be fairness, there has to be transparency, there has to be accountability. We can move on to the next slide. In terms of the inputs, what are these inputs? Staff, ICT, physical resources, consultants, large-scale procurement coaches, road, rail, networks, water pipes, and so on. And of course, we have all this legislation that guides how the public service functions over and above the PFMA, there's preferential procurement policy framework, broad-based black economy empowerment, and so on. What would be consideration of this committee, for example, economy, the purchasing of inputs? You would find that at the end of the quarter, yes, you've spent the money that you've allocated to you, but you only paid the supplier on month number 3. Now that does not contribute to the first objective of the government of supporting SMEs. As an example, you don't conduct the correct needs assessment, appointment of non-performing contractors, that those are issues that deal with the economy. Efficiency, you would appoint consultants to do a particular job, but you don't monitor the particular performance of the consultant. Or even an employee, if you have appointed an employee who is not competent for the job, then that is not efficient because you are paying a salary, but you are not getting any output for that. So the interaction with the committee, it would be even involved with the SA in some instances, that what are the possibilities to ensure that the public services has the competence, has the capacity, and has people at the right places doing the things that they are employed for. Effectiveness, to the example, for example, the requirement is that 70% local content. It's an interrogation issue for the committee as well, that is still being adhered to. Can go to the next slide. The transformation of input into output. And here a critical partner in assessing this aspect of performance of government would be the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. For example, with administration, it is a recurring theme. It leads to the outcome that we would not wish to see. And for the economy, quality, quantity, load price, and so on, what they found that weak operational planning leads to poor quality of procurement planning. So you find that the input you need to purchase computers, furniture, and so on, it's not done on time, or it's not done with the allowing competitive process and so on that allows the department to get the actual input that would take them forward. And some of these findings, you would find that, for example, in the NPEC report. NPEC report just stands for Management Performance Assessment 2, which is something that the Department of Performance Monitoring Evaluation started quite recently. It assesses performance in terms of planning, in terms of governance, in terms of HR, in terms of financial management as well. And some departments are doing quite well in that, and some are not doing so well. And then efficiency, minimal resources, maximum output. One aspect that has there is that recently announced cost containment measures. So we should minimize cost on travel, accommodation, use of consultants. And I just quoted one example where you have to spend that amount of money just to address issues that would normally be addressed by people who are employed to do that particular job, which is quite a lot of money. And effectiveness understanding is not acceptable, because if you understand that money could have been used somewhere else
better use and take towards the appropriate objectives of government. And also, if you have staff that are able to actually improve conflict management, that also helps to ensure the contractors are appointed or consultants are appointed or whatever you've appointed to perform a particular task actually did to execute that. And if we can go to the next slide. Slide 29. In 2012, this has been the theme in all the body features for the past 5 years, and also it analyzes every aspect of national threat, and the monitors are really tabled their reports. It's quite a recurring thing that public expenditure is growing, but if you check in terms of the output, if you look in terms of the output, you find that you are not able to actually observe that spiking in spending. And the output would be also social services, infrastructure, and government services, and so on. In terms of the economy, I did refer to the example earlier. You've got a municipality that opts to purchase highly expensive solutions to address their water infrastructure challenges, which ultimately are not sustainable as they cannot be repaired at low cost. You don't have the people on site your capacity to address and address maintenance and so on, issues related to the equipment, and also issues of efficiency as well. I'm sure examples are quite common of where houses have been built, but they need to be removed because of maybe they are on the incorrect side of the quality of the house that has been built, so such low quality that we have to build another house, so you can incur additional costs regarding that. And effectiveness, the project is complete, the library is in place, the computer room is in place, but no one is using the library, no one is using the computer room. So that's an issue that's also of concern to the work of the committee. The following slide basically speaks to the money deal, and already colleagues have covered a lot of aspects on that. So I'll just refer highlights. On slide 30, what is very important there is a definition of the division of revenue bill itself. I'll just read out quickly. It provides for the equitable division of revenue raised nationally among the national, provincial, and local spheres of government. And also, very important, and the responsibilities of all three spheres pursuant to such division and allocation. And I will indicate up now why that is very important, and you would find that even in the meetings we have, to have the SORA in the meeting is very important as we interrogate department with invited in terms of the programs and objectives that they have to attain. We can go to the next slide. And there is a very important policy program of government, which is provision of infrastructure in education. As you will see there on the left, the responsibilities of the transferring national officer and the receiving officer. Transferring national officer is the national department, the receiving officer is the province in this case. For example, I will just read out some of the conditions. Responsibilities of the national department. DBME will further select the infrastructure sites in provinces. DBME must provide guidance to provinces in planning and prioritization. DBNE and National Treasury must jointly evaluate and provide feedback to all provinces on assessment of the user asset management program or infrastructure plan. So really this gives effect to the unitary state as the constitution provides for this independent and independent as well. There's the element of cooperation is very important, and national departments have a huge responsibility in the implementation of some of these programs. We can go on to the next slide. The Appropriation Act, finally, did speak to this adopted. It dealt with after the adoption of the fiscal framework, and then we have 4 months to consider it. And also, amendments may only be considered after the SORA bill is passed. We can move on to the next slide. And of course, anything to amend the bill, it needs to be really well thought out. It's not something that is to be taken lightly. It means you really, there is something we feel very strong that this is a problem. And you will have to demonstrate that as per those conditions outlined there, take into account the broad strategic priorities and allocations of the relevant budget, demonstrate the implications, to demonstrate the impact on transfer payments, capital payments, and recurrent spending, and also set out how the report will relate to the prevailing departmental strategic plan, reports of the AG, committee reports of staff, Section 32 reports. So it entails a lot of work and a lot of analysis and assessment. But as Musa has mentioned, this offer so many times now, the role of the budget offer will be very important in that. And the medium-term budget policy statement, I did outline earlier when Shepherdson did want to come down to all this negotiation between the legislature and the executive. It sets out the policy framework for the next 3 years, and the committee has an opportunity to comment on that, and when the Musa tables will respond in that, and we will see if indeed these our recommendations have been incorporated in the budget that is tabled. And then, the second slide 35, I think, explains what I said now, especially that last bullet on slide 35. If the Minister of Explanation does not address Parliament concerns, Parliament can amend the budget in order to give effect to each proposal. I've included some examples of what we have recommended in the past, in the last year's NDPS, for example. The first recommendation there is the realization that the function for human settlement, the plans are that will now shift to local government, as it ideally suited to be implemented at that level, as they are aware of the planning zones and what are the immediate priorities in each of the districts and so on. So we felt that before this function shifts to the local governments here, it's very important that as they are not implementing the program or all along, they are phasing in of building capacity and ensuring the systems are in place for them to be able to run the program once the function has fully shifted to the local governments here. So I'll just read part of it very quickly. The Minister of Finance and the Minister of Human Settlements develop and implement a capacity enhancement and support initiative specifically for the successful development of the human settlement function to the 6 metros. And there's the response of the Minister. It actually allocated money to address that particular recommendation of the committee. So that is, I think that's good. And also, there's a second recommendation, which emanates from, we know, from the establishment of the Department of Higher Education. The FET function was meant to shift to the Department of Higher Education. While the function officially, it has shifted in terms of the function itself, the funds that's not followed. The funds are still residing at DBE, and this has caused some problems there. So we recommended that this be expedited and dealt with speedily, and the Minister did respond to that for the establishment of a committee to specifically look at that issue. On the last slide, or the second last slide, is what has been outlined by colleagues already. We're going to consider the appropriation bill. There will be public hearings held. We will invite departments and stakeholders. And on slide 38, Musa did highlight all of these portfolio committees, cabinet, AG, public entities, as the Human Rights Commission, all of these reports or all of these institutions are very critical in enhancing and assisting the work of the committee. It is not all that we be able to pick up in some service in the expenditure report table by National Treasury to ask that actually there are challenges in processing programs. But we'll be able to pick up from these other reports, the Human Rights Commission, the Auditor General, and even some of the scope reports as well, FFC, SALGA, and so on. And
Oh, it's not the second last slide. The very last slide now. This is the... Okay, it's access to the parliamentary budget offer. It's a very welcome edition, really, just to access parliament when all of these documents are tabled to give us more in terms of looking out for what is it that we can improve on and assist in, not only the treasure, but assist the country that in this area we can find efficiencies. Let's focus on this area or let's focus on that area. So they are really here to help us in that regard. Thank you very much for the opportunity, honorable member.
Thank you. Member, if you want to ask questions, there is a lot of clarity. Quality comments. Yes, Honorable Manana. Honorable.
But the question that I raised earlier on, you indicated that you are going to clarify it when your presidency is made. But I never had that clarity very well. Could you just clarify it? Because I want to know our relationship with the NGOP. When is the report coming to us and so on? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Just comment quickly. The presentation was very quick. There's lots of information to absorb. I, however, picked up that there have been findings, there have been that of non-compliance, for example. My question is, or maybe not a statement I'd like to make, is that the committee, I believe, needs to deal with those issues and the perpetrators of non-compliance.
Banzi will speak to the NGOP and the referral thereof. I agree with Honorable Fee on findings on non-compliance. That is, it should not be tolerated by the committee at all. It's something we need to be very firm on. On the question from our Honorable Dr. Mamadoka on the Special Committee on Will, it's I just took it as it from the document which was tabled then in February at the end of freezing wall. So that is what they indicated then. So it's something that we can check even now, that how far are they. And on the personal strength, at the beginning of each budget process, which is actual now, which the National Treasurer will issue instructions and guidelines to departments and public entities and so on for allocation for 2015. And in that process as well, there will be a time where departments will come on the burden and off the money as well and say, no, these are the things in place, we are ready to implement the grant. Once that decision has been made, it will be announced usually during the time of the MPPPS that these are the allocations that we are looking into to make. For example, municipal water infrastructure run is an example. It was announced in 2011 MPPPS, and the municipality said we are looking at this problem and we've received the plan and this is what we are looking to implement when I table the part in 2012. So that's normally how the process unfolds. Now, the condition that are entailed in the DORA is to ensure that the national sphere and the local sphere indeed have this documentation in place in terms of did the national sphere receive the plan indeed, was the plan evaluated by the national sphere of government. So as we said, in case there is under expenditure at the end of the financially, when we track back and try to investigate what exactly went wrong, then we can check. The first check would be that these conditions being adhered to. Is the national department support you accordingly? But did they evaluate the plans accordingly? Then we assess that if that was not done accordingly, then we can have an idea that actually the source of the problem is. So it's just to assess that in that regard.
In terms of the report from the Select Committee on Appropriation, when we build the Division of Revenue and then once we've done our report and it's submitted to the House, then there's a debate with the Division of Revenue. Then the Division of Revenue is referred to the Select Committee. Then they will also do their report after engaging with the stakeholders. I think the issue is to ensure that the recommendations that the Standing Committee on Appropriation has made, for instance, to the Minister of Finance, are not duplicated or are not contradictory. So, like, usually our reports will give to our counterparts in the Select Committee so that the Select Committee is aware of what we've recommended to avoid duplication and contradiction.
Thank you. Maybe to add this, you know, on the issue of non-compliance, I agree totally that definitely is not acceptable. And from the research point of view, what we normally do, whenever we do our research, say we will have an enrichment with the Department of Transport, we make a response that we take their annual report and pick up, you know, all those issues, did they get an address report, what are the issues and so on and so forth. So that when the committee deals with them, we'll say, by the way, these are the issues that were picked up by the 45 general, and we think you must address them. So we make sure that we are consistent with them, so that we don't find that they repeat the same non-compliance issues. Yeah.
Any more
takers?
Any
I don't know whether I want to raise a question or comment on the housing tax law that is made mention of on slide 3, that we are like back to square one. And yet, so many RCP houses have been built over the past 20 years. And there could be a number of reasons why we are almost like back to square one.
the most obvious one being the mobility of people from rural areas to urban areas. And that is the probably the region that is fighting the most. But I don't know whether we have looked into the mobility of people across provinces as well, to and from. Eastern Cape to Western Cape and backwards. Eastern Cape to Western and backwards. How then the Free State and backwards and so on and so on. You can actually look at all provinces and you might actually see the same pattern. With the result that you have people only three RTP houses. The ownership of the RTP house and then selling to someone else instead of something that would be a lot more logical, leaving the property to the next generation. Would be the most logical thing to do, but it doesn't happen that way. The register of ownership at all spheres of government, national, provincial, and local spheres, so that we know who you are registered having received the RTP house. And cannot wait up the next day and say, I don't have a house. We are then able to say, well, look, we have you on register and said you received a house on such and such a day. Prove otherwise. The last question is, if our population going so fast that it outnumbers the provision house, have we looked at all these issues or we simply prepare a simplistic answer to say there is huge mobility from rural areas to urban areas, which is a reality, but there are other factors that I don't think that we have looked into. And so we, at one level, government looks like it's not deliverable housing. At another level, there is a huge knock on the hit card on as a result of this kind of education I'm making reference to. If we had this kind of system where if we know for instance that 16 million people are receiving social grants, why are we not able to know that we have 3 million families that have received housing already? What is the cause? So I'm raising this issue. Perhaps you'd want to comment through the chat at this. But I'm saying, have we looked at all of these things and began to think to ourselves, government is actually not failing in terms of delivery, but probably failing in terms of register and monitoring.
I think the issue that Honorable Kavata has raised is very important, and we are going to have to come back to that. If you look at the last part of your presentation on themes, it's really at the heart of the work of this committee. Because it's well and good to understand the number budget for the appropriation bill, but I think at the end of the day, in South Africa, our system is that Parliament approves the budget with appropriate money to be spent by the executive, government department, agencies, etc. That will puzzle people going forward would be, why do wrong things continue to happen under our watch? That's going to be the critical thing. That you read stories in the newspaper about departments spending money not in the right way, yet they come here, they get more money. That's going to be the test of Parliament. What do you do when you observe that there is this problem? Was an issue is about if a bank is not performing, obviously, you can't just say answer because they are beneficiaries on the other side. But surely, this bank intervention must be there on time. So that money must be set. Where it is required. So I think when it comes to the role of the committee on oversight, monitoring, maybe looking at performance, it's going to be those kind of things. It's not just to call a department and say, but you know, why are you not spending your grants and that's all. There has to be intervention to ensure that money that has been appropriated for specific programs actually reach those programs, reach the beneficiaries. If you look at some of the things they're saying about quality, value for money, issues of pricing, etc. It means we have to watch those things and be able to intervene and make sure that we correct those problems. So that money must be spent properly. So value for money, that's what it means. If we see that the Department of Education is spending 500 million to build that school, surely we should do something about it. They can't come here and we say, oh, you need more money to build school. And we can see that money being wasted. So that to be benchmark. What kind of school costs 500 million? That's making an example. That the committee will have to be very alert in looking at this. Because if you look at our legislation and our policies in South Africa, and the whole presentation that you did this morning, if you look at it, just go through it, you will be very surprised why we have problems, why there is regular why we have physical damage. Because there is a watchdog. The parliament and the committee, don't we see the thing? That's going to be a big question. If the fiscal dumping, why don't we see before it even happens? If that's our thing. The old trust much we don't see, but these people are not doing their work. If a department, national department, is supposed to build dams in Limpopo, they've been given billions of rent and they're not doing it, why don't we see it? But the question is that when we see it, what do we do? When they come here, because they will come, ask for money, for more money. Oh no, please, not all over, we'll do it next year, but the problem is that we do it now. So we must tell government, where people don't plan properly, we must tell them. As we're saying earlier, that you can't put the cart before the horse. If you want to get billions of rent to build them, it's because you've got plans for that. You don't have time for ideas. So if you ask money for ideas in a financial year and you get given money, there's no way you're going to do it. Because it means you're going to spend that year planning. And so the planning cycle is very important. And this committee will have to look at budgets very carefully, say, okay, these guys are asking for this money, do they have a plan? And we can interrogate them on those plans. So that when they don't do it, we are able to say, it's not going to happen. And we'll be able to see where the regular expenditure is able. We need to ask the government to function efficiently. Without wastage, without the regular expenditure, without fiscal dumping, and all these things. So at the end, I think when we go to the presentation, we must come back to this issue. You were saying earlier, Musa, that this committee is established in terms of legislation. I want to assume you meant it's got power.
Yeah.
We have to come back to that issue. What are these powers? What can we do when things go wrong?
to correct them. We have not been told by Daily Guardian that things are wrong when it is in Parliament, committees like this. We are told by Daily Guardian that things are wrong, but we don't know. It can't be right. But when we know, what do we do? Because South Africa would be better off if committees like this are able to say this is wrong, shall not be done. But if we don't, these things will continue. So I think when we come to the process that dealing with this issue, we must really interrogate this issue. But how do we interact in to make sure that one is intended with the fiscal framework is going to achieve, particularly in terms of budget allocation for progress. But also we need to come to these issues about the impact of spending. We need to interrogate this and see where we spend a lot of resources, why is the quality not improving, what are some of the things that departments should be looking at. But I think my view is that, I think for the purpose of today, I'm sure members will agree with me that I think the SABO team has given us enough information to be able to take us forward. But we are going to have to understand quite in detail our role with respect to ensuring that the resources are appropriated and used in a way that improves the quality of life of people on the ground. No wastage. Because if this thing continue what we are here, then we are safe. Because the president, why didn't you finish? And if you did, what did you do? You can't just say, no, well, we went to the four points. We found that these guys are not really making progress building a dam. And what did you see afterwards? You got them to get more money. We must not do things like this. I think we must be able to say you're not going to get the money if you're not doing these things. And Parliament will understand. People they will understand. That is the house of the people. Parliament represents the people. In the central government department, you are not going to get the money because you're not doing what you intended. And I'm sure they're very good to understand so that you crack the whip, you show accountability, you show that things are done properly. But enough for this. Maybe I allow members to, if there are things that you want to comment on, but I want to talk about the program quickly for a week. It has not worked that this is until next week, because I think so, not up to the end, and we can distribute it. Just go through it quickly, but before there's any other comments, yes, another man.
Thank you very much, there's one issue that you raised earlier on with regards to getting an image over the weekend. I'm the one who never raised anything. I don't know whether you don't have my email.
I think there was a mistake on Coupwise when they tried to find your email address. But I did send the presentation. I think showing it for you, Manana, on the parliamentary Coupwise.
Long time ago. I was here in 2004.
Okay, then we'll get him an alternative email address.
Just a quick one, Chairperson. The statement you made earlier about what are we doing about it, I think it's a very, very important statement. I'm sure most of us have stories to tell about our constituencies. You know, I went to my constituency over the weekend, and there's a school that was burned in 2002, and I left there taking photos. And one of the teachers there, I hope it's just another one of taking photos, and nobody does anything about it. So I think it's important.
Because remember, if things don't change, people lose confidence in members of color. So you talk too much. In fact, they think we spend time sleeping.
So if things go wrong, there will be vindication as well. You know, that's what we do. I think people must understand it's not going to be business as usual. You know, 20 years into democracy, there must be efficiency, there must be accountability, and people must understand that there will be consequences for lack of delivery, or lack of expenditure. I mean, you can't have DGs running around here, these officials doing wrong things. And they come to Parliament and all we do, we approve things for them. It must not happen. And that's what this committee must do. Darren, what are we going to do next few days?
On Friday we'll be meeting with National Treasury on who will be reaching us on this manifold in appropriation law. All our meetings and the constituents is going to be on this manifold in appropriation law. So Friday report, National Treasury, in membership note, the venue has changed, no longer easy for 9. In H2L case, but we will send a reminder in this regard. Tuesday, the 8th of July, Parliamentary Budget Office. Wednesday, the 9th of July, Financial and Fiscal Commission. Tuesday, the 15th of July, Public Service Commission. Following day, the 16th, we'll consider the third draft report on the 24th appropriation law. And we are hoping that the report will be adopted on the 22nd of July. For the 27th of July, which is on a Tuesday. The report will be debated, the appropriation bill will be debated on the 21st of July, and we are hoping to have our strategic planning session the following week, because that's the week where we have been allocated conversation and I won't be able to see you next week. That week of the 29th of July. Thank you, Sean.
Can we now estimate unless members want to make some change. The 25th is based on the Friday. It is up to our position for
I'm trying to avoid Friday, but this week is because we have already scheduled it, but from next week you can see we are avoiding Friday. But that's on the 25th, it comes from our big chief. Can
I just ask you, the length of the duration of Friday TV? Is it difficult to estimate?
She's on a national treasury and they normally they don't take too long with they are back to the point. But members need to be aware that there will be technical amendments which we are waiting for from the national treasury. The comments are going to be to us before meeting on Friday. So I'm not sure how long it's going to take on a technical because they have stopped the members we have to be clear on before we process the bill.
So why don't we schedule 10 until 12? Lower your expectations. So don't book flights at once. Give yourself a bit of space. Go from the clock. But we will try and avoid Friday because it does create a problem for people who have to connect. I think for today, let me take the opportunity to thank all the honorable members. I think we started on the right note. And our team, they are very energetic, as you can see. I think we'll go places. One of the things we will have to look at later, probably it is not something we want to be immediate, but what I'll be sure to talking about oversight is this too. I think
if we do business, it should be to priority projects. I think it's very important. If there is a priority project of government in a particular part of the country that we think we want to check what's happening. And I think something that we have to specify maybe later in the year. On study calls, I want to suggest that the researchers just do a bit of work and say to us, where do you think we can see things that would help us, best practices, so that we don't have to go all over, but be able to go to places where we get something that will help our work and improve our work, so that when we start to travel to a particular place, we know that we will be able to get something that will help us. So if we can do a bit of work ahead, thinking about the necessities that they might have. But it's important to say, we think here there's something we can learn that will help. Because at the end of the day, once we improve the quality of our work, and the appropriation committee can't be like when it was 10 years ago. There must be visible improvement in the way we do things and progress. And sometimes it's good to look at what other people are doing and the success. But thank you very much for today. We'll see you all again.